little over a week ago, we made the decision to go in a different direction with our head coaching position. We put together an aggressive plan to interview the top candidates to bring the best to Chicago. We met with six very qualified coaches over 5 days, and we appreciate their time and their consideration. I can tell you they each presented unique circumstances and truly made this decision difficult, but also very clear. We set out to find the best leader for our franchise, period. Our research, preparation, and the interview process led us to Matt Nagy. The preparation is what allowed us to work aggressively and also with accuracy. We knew exactly what we were looking for in our head coach. This is about more than the quarterback. Yes, that's the most important position on our team, but this is about 53 players, and it's about leading a group of men, and it's about winning in all three phases. We met with Matt Sunday morning in Kansas City, and the longer we dug in, the more we knew he was special and he was the right fit for us. The interview started around 8 o'clock in the morning, finished around 12:30, and it was continued with dinner later that night. We go through this process, all the research, the amount of references, and it all points you in a direction. And then you go through the interviews. And to be honest, it's a really great feeling when you meet a person and everything clicks and everything comes together. Matt's a proven leader. He's a winner. He's intelligent. He's innovative. He has strong character. He's got a great family. And he shares the same passion for the game that I have. I have a tremendous amount of respect for Coach Reed. With him being a longtime leader in our league and a successful coach, Coach Reed believes in Matt Nagy, and so do I. I'm proud to be able to pair with Matt and attack our plan for success together. With that, I'd like to introduce the new head coach of the Chicago Bears, Matt Nagy.
Thanks for everybody showing up today. This is truly an honor. It's special. It's a dream, and I'm still pinching myself. Everything happens really fast, but it means a lot to me to be here. I appreciate everybody here showing up, and I want to get started here, like most, just thanking some people. And I'll end up missing some people by accident, but I'll definitely see those and know who they are, and I'll reach out to you, down the road here. But before I get started here, I'd like to thank the McCaskey family, Ted Phillips, Ryan Pace, for believing in me, providing me the opportunity to become the 16th head coach of the NFL's founding franchise, the Chicago Bears. And I got to tell you, man, that feels good. That feels real good. I'd like to thank Clark Hunt, the entire Hunt family, along with Mark Donovan, Ted Cruz, and the rest of the Chiefs Kingdom for giving my family and I five wonderful years that we'll always cherish. They make it feel like it's the home of the Chiefs in Arrowhead, and I appreciate that and had a great time there. Thank you. Also want to give a thanks to Jeffrey Lurie, Howie Roseman, and the Philadelphia Eagles organization for giving a 29-year-old washed-up Arena League player a chance to be a part of the National Football League, which is always my goal. I didn't do it as a player, but I'm doing it as a coach. We all have our roots, and I want to thank everyone back home in the small town of Manheim, Pennsylvania, in Lancaster County for always supporting me. Go Barons. Got to tell this story because it's just too special to not tell. As I showed up for my interview with Mr. McCaskey, he approaches me coming out of the car, and he says, I know you're from Lancaster, and asked me if I knew about McCaskey High, which is in our division in high school. And he said, my great-grandfather started that school. And I said, man, my heart told me, I didn't say it to him, but this is meant to be. I also want to thank my high school head coach, Mike Williams, the rest of our staff, and all my teammates I grew up with. Wouldn't be here without you guys. University of Delaware, the late Tubby Raymond, who just passed a few months ago. My offensive coordinator, Ted Kemsky, and then the recruiting coordinator, Greg Perry, who was always there in my corner. I want to thank you for being one of two schools that offered me a scholarship to play Division I AA football and believing in me, as well as the rest of my Blue Hen teammates. I cherish every moment there. The Arena League, what a fun time. All my coaches, my teammates, small fraternity guys, some of us here now in the league growing. It's been really neat. And then, of course, all the Eagles, Chiefs, coaches, and players. I could go on and on and on. I'd be remiss if I left out the quarterback rooms that I was a part of in Philadelphia and in Kansas City, and then my guy, Alex Smith. He was special to me. We built a great relationship. He helped me grow as a coach, as a person, as a leader, and I just want to thank him for that. Larry Wisdom, a guy no one in here knows, but he persuaded me to go live that dream. I'm living the dream, and the dream came true. Brad Childress, my partner, 5 years together, my partner in crime. He, every day, just telling stories and being there for me, being there with me. He has a special place in my heart, and I just thank him from the bottom of my heart. Coach Reed, my mentor, the best. Words don't do it justice. He's my guy. I learned how to be a better coach, for sure, but I learned how to be a better person, a better man, and that's what, all in all, that's what this is all about, is being a better person, better man, and you'll be a better coach because of that. So, Coach Reed, thank you. And then, last but not least, before I get to my family, Brett Veach, out of sight, out of mind, that's all I'll say. I'll leave it at that. We had our talk the last couple of days. He supports me. I love you. Thank you. Family, extended family back in Pennsylvania, New Jersey, the Northeast. I love everybody back there. I appreciate it. And then to my in-laws, Fred and Sandy, Freddie and Danny, the rest of our family, my grandmother, who's one of the strongest women that I know, along with my mother, Gail, and her husband, Jim Stouch. And then my father, who's been a big part of my life, Bill Nagy. Appreciate everything. Thanks for raising me the right way, doing things the right way. And then, of course, last but not least, these guys right here. I thought I was going to get real emotional up here, but you know what? I'm happy. I'm proud of you guys. You know, this is why we do what we do. I love y'all, right? Go Bears? Yeah. Is it Dub Bears? Right? Dub Bears? Yeah. All right, good. I love you guys. And then to my beautiful wife. She's my rock. This is why I'm here. This right here is why we do it. I love you. So with that, I'll open to questions.
If you get any questions here, we have two mics, so just please raise your hand. We'll get to you. Dan, can I kick us off? On the left, Dan.
Matt, this obviously moved very fast. Could you take us through Saturday night, through yesterday morning, and also the conviction that you had that this was the right thing to do for you?
Sure, yeah. Obviously, Saturday night was a very difficult night. Was numb for a lot of the night for so many different reasons. And that was, just collectively for us, working so hard to get to where we got to, and then to lose the way we did was difficult. But you have the family support, you know, on the drive home, you know, the pump you up deal, and keep you going because you have one of the biggest days of your life coming up the next morning. So lots of support from family, friends, and from immediate family. Support from just to show you how this organization here works and what meant the world to me. Before I even got into that interview, I get a text message from my agent telling me they respect the loss, and they respect your feelings, and they want to, if you need to move it back or you need some time to get over that, then do it. And that meant the world to me. And instead, we went even earlier. I wanted to go earlier because of that. So that's where it all started. That was a good feeling.
Matt, how much of the process or the situation now is what you're going to do in terms of a defense? An offensive scheme, will you retain Vic Fangio? Do you want to run a 3-4? Schematically, what are you bringing, and what was that as part of the interview process?
Yeah, that's a good question because that's a big part of it. And so we all are aware of that situation, and that's a very important hire for me. But there's a lot of things that go into that decision, and Vic and I have talked. We understand that. We understand the situation. But that's something that we're going to attack here after we get going here with today. We're going to attack that full steam ahead, and we're going to make a clear decision on what's best for Vic and what's best for this organization.
There's been a lot of reports that when Mitchell Trubisky was in the draft that you were very high on him. How much did that play into your decision coming here to develop a young quarterback, and, of course, what do you see in him?
It's certainly a part of it, But that's not the reason why I'm here. I'm here because of the organization and the direction, and I could feel that from the moment I was in that interview process. That's a benefit to have Mitch Trubisky, and I know a lot about him because I had him in the combine and we spent some time with him. But this is a team game, and you're just as important. Everyone on this team is just as important as the quarterback. But that was certainly a part of it.
How much time have you spent getting, I don't know how much time you've had, to look at what Mitch was able to do this season and kind of how his strengths and weaknesses might fit into your style offense?
Right. So it was difficult just because all year long there wasn't much of that going on unless it was against the defense that we were playing that week. So if we're playing the Saints and he's on offense, then, you know, I would watch that. I would notice that. But for the most part, for instance, one of the games was the Vikings. I got to watch that. But I really started hammering it out once our season ended. You try to get some tape in. But that's one of my main objectives is once everything starts slowing down and we get through this, we're going to really, Ryan and I will really get after it, and we'll give opinions to each other and really focus in on that part of the game.
Yeah. Matt, do you plan on calling plays yourself?
Yes. Yes.
JJ?
Matt, what's the best piece of advice you've got from Coach Reed in this process?
Go out there, be honest, be yourself, and let your personality show.
Matt, what do you... Running a whole team is a lot different than what you've done before. What gives you the confidence that you're ready to do it right now?
Well, I've always considered myself a leader of men, and I have a command, I feel like, in the room. So you never really know exactly how it's going to go until you do it. I never knew how being an offensive coordinator was going to go until I did it. I never knew how being a quarterback coach was going to go until I did it. So this will be a new opportunity to me, and it'll be a challenge. But I'll learn, and there'll be ups and downs. And I'll be able to understand where those are at. I'll have Ryan there in my corner and say, hey, Matt, you know, listen, maybe we look at it this way or that way, but I'm going to grow. And that's the beautiful part of being in this position right now.
Matt, what about this job excited you the most, and how would you detail your connection with Ryan?
Yeah, the direction of this team and this organization. You see it. You feel it. There's a want there to be great. And so one of the things that I noticed right away off the bat with Ryan is understanding how easy it's going to be for us to have a partnership. It's going to be strong. I told him, I said, I got you, you know. And this is something here that we're going to do together. No egos involved, right? I'm going to help you with any questions you have. You do the same to me. You criticize me, I'll criticize you. We may agree to disagree, but guess what? We're going to do it to benefit the team. And in the end, we'll be able to look each other in the eyes, respect each other, and smile because things, you know, we'll make good things happen.
Matt, I know the Chiefs ran a 3-4 defense as well.
Mm-hmm.
Even if Vic doesn't stay, will you still run a version of the 3-4?
Again, that's something that we're really going to start hammering away here. We don't know that just yet. It is a valid question because there's benefits to both. Now, one thing to keep in mind is everyone keeps talking about the 3-4 and the 4-3, but 60% of the game is played in sub-defense with an even front. So, you know, it sounds good, but a lot of times if you go back and you study tape, you see that the even front that you get, and some there's teams now that we're playing where they don't play anything but sub-defense, and they have a nickel in the whole game. So you want to be careful of putting too much emphasis on that. I do understand that it affects some of the guys that you draft and different positions, but we'll evaluate that.
Yeah. Hi, Matt. You talked about feeling dazed after the loss Saturday night. How do you then make such an important life decision within a 24-hour span, and how do you get yourself in the right mindset to even consider that?
Well, for me, it's okay to feel disappointed and numb. That's okay. That's natural. We put in so many hours to try to go win that football game, and it didn't happen. So to feel hurt and at a loss is okay. But when you wake up in the morning, it's a new day. The sun comes up. These guys have given me an opportunity to give my best and to show them who I am. And I refused. I worked too hard to let them down. Good, bad, or indifferent. If it didn't happen, it didn't happen. But it did happen. And we connected, and it was a really good thing.
Mark?
Matt, can you give an example of a situation where you failed or had something not work out, made an adjustment, and then saw a benefit of that?
Yeah, a lot of times that can happen with in regards to failure. It could be where you're in a game, somebody gets hurt. Heck, we had it happen with in our last game with Kelsey getting hurt. You know, and that's a struggle. So what you need to do is you need to try to adjust as best as you can. Now, unfortunately, in this past game, we didn't make that happen. But you learn from that, and you understand that those are things you got to always take into play, whether it's offense or defense. Know that that could happen, and you got to prepare for it.
Right here,
back left.
Mm-hmm.
If Andy Reid hadn't handed you the play calling duties last five games of the season, do you think you'd be standing here right now?
I don't know. You might have to ask all the general managers. Not sure.
Matt, right here in the middle. In your estimation, what are some of the pillars of a productive and successful coach-quarterback relationship?
Trust, number one. He has to trust the quarterback coach, and the quarterback coach has to trust him. And that goes with the system and the philosophy. Honesty. You got to be able to be honest. The quarterback needs to know when he's doing something wrong or how he can get better. The coach needs to understand when he's not teaching something the right way or if he sees something wrong, he's got to be able to admit his mistakes. And then the other part would be, and sometimes this gets neglected, but needs to be, is the over-communication. So that's all kind of a part of the honesty and trust, but you got to communicate. And when you fail to communicate, there's gray area. And when there's gray area, then bad things happen.
Back left, Mike.
What did you learn as a play caller that gives you the confidence to continue to do it?
Well, it was a great experience for me in several ways. The preparation part, you don't know what to expect. So following up during the week, you know, you can kind of prepare and you might change your call sheet versus what Coach Reid had when he did it, where it's more of a memorization of what's he going to call and try to get that to get into the quarterback. But the biggest part is trying to prepare for, okay, when you call a second and 10 play, you got to be down being ready for either third and 10, you know, second and 4, et cetera. So your mind's always going. Whereas when you're not doing that and you're just relaying plays in, you just need to hear what the third down play is. So I felt like each and every week I became more and more comfortable with it. I felt like getting into a rhythm at times of when to call certain runs and how to do my call sheet on a Thursday, Friday night, and I grew from it.
Colleen, right in the center here.
Matt, how would you say your playing career and all you went through and that influences you as a coach?
I'm sorry?
How would you say your playing career has influenced you as a coach?
Yeah, heavily, a lot. My playing career has a lot of experience. For me, being in high school and football was my sport. I wanted to be able to make it and be that D1 player that goes on and plays at, you know, Alabama, Syracuse, wherever, and that didn't happen. So that was kind of, I had a chip on my shoulder for that. Same thing happening in college, wanted to go to the NFL, didn't happen. And so that has a big part of it. And then on top of that, when you play the game and you play as many games as I had the luxury of playing, you experience failures and successes, and there's more failures than successes. So it helps you grow as a person. It helps you grow as a coach, and you got to use those to your benefit.
On your left here.
Yep.
How did the workflow go beyond playing calling plays as far as install and, you know, just game planning and stuff? Because you had Brad there, you had Coach Reid. How did that work get divvied up with such experienced guys there?
So it was really neat because between the three of us and the rest of our staff, we all gave ideas. Everyone had ideas. There was no egos. And, you know, you would think most of the time that would be the biggest challenge is too many, cooks in the kitchen. But that wasn't the case. And number one, with Coach Reid, there's zero ego. So he doesn't care. If the play works and you ever see his beautiful mind board in that room and the amount of plays that we used to put up there just to kind of see where it was at, he was okay with it, whether it came from me, Coach Chile, Coach Reid, or any of the other coaching guys on coaching staff. So there was a dynamic. It was a little different last year than this year. So in the end, though, we ended up kind of finding our rhythm, and we worked it out, and we had a lot of fun with it.
Right here, Matt. How would you describe your initial reintroduction to Mitch Trubisky here when you saw him at Halisaw?
Yeah, it was neat, you know. So the story for me and the way I look at it is, again, obviously we were in Kansas City last year. We were looking for a quarterback. And so we went through the process, just like the other teams that needed quarterbacks, of going through the combine and doing the 15-minute interviews and trying to talk to them as much as possible. But it's just too hard to figure out who that player is, who that person is in that 15 minutes. And so I had an opinion of Mitch where he was kind of introverted and I felt scripted, which 95% of the guys are in that atmosphere. But we went ahead and took several quarterbacks that we were interested in and brought them in and basically had them for 6 to 7 hours and just let their personality show. Let them be who they are just in front of us. And after 6 hours of being with Mitch, it was unbelievable. I thought that he did a wonderful job. Thought he's a hell of a person. Thought he knew football inside out. It was fun talking ball with him. You know, to see him again here just today was neat. It was neat.
Matt, we all know the real estate story. When did you know that you wanted to be a football coach?
Football coach forever. I always knew that. You know, as you really high school. When I knew I was in high school, I knew I'll go coach high school football for 30 years and go try to win a few state championships, and I'm good with that. But things happen for a reason, and sometimes things happen when I least expected it. But I think my wife will tell you I have a type A personality, and for me, sometimes it's good, sometimes it's bad. But as a leader of men, connecting with the players is, I feel like, one of my strengths. And everyone's different. They're all going to be different how I connect to them and how our coaching staff connects to them. But if you treat them like good people and you give them and you let them know that you care for them, usually good things will happen on the field when you're coaching them.
Matt, when you look at this roster, you said that you kind of see the arrow pointing up, and you talked about Mitch a little bit. What else do you see here that tells you that this team's going in the right direction?
So I think position-wise, the obvious thing offensively, when you mentioned Mitch, is you have a quarterback there that you put stock in regards to draft him. Your running backs, you're good there. You know, your wide receivers, the same thing. There's guys there that you've had some injuries, but it's just a matter of, I think what's going to be interesting for me and our staff is being able to find the best quality of everybody on the team, whether it's offense or defense. So, again, using the offensive line, tight ends, wide receivers, is figuring out what are their weaknesses, right? And how can our strengths help their weaknesses? And then in return, let's give them a chance to see if they can improve and get better. And so just because of their prior experience here, that's not how I come in looking at this. And it'll be interesting to get with Ryan and just kind of have him hear my opinions and the coaching staff's opinions on these guys. And everyone gets a fair chance. So the same thing goes for defense. You know, obviously the front seven is a big part of the defense. A lot of good players there. You have the corners that are free agents that are good players as well. So, to me, I'm so fired up when this is done to get into football and start digging into it and just really attacking that.
Matt, was Mitchell at all involved in the interview process? And if so, what was his involvement?
He wasn't involved in with me in my process.
Matt, Andy Reid called you the best head coaching candidate he's ever worked with. How difficult is it to live up to praise like that, and is that a good thing that he said that?
How difficult do you think it is? Yeah. No, I love him to death, but woo. We'll go. Hey, that's a challenge, though, right? That's a challenge. So he gave me an opportunity in this league in 2010. He gave me an opportunity, and I told him I'm not going to let him down. And when I hugged him yesterday, told him I loved him, I said, I'm not going to let you down. And I'm going to stick to that.
In the middle, Dion.
Matt,
how are you?
I'm good. Speaking of a challenge, you are the third different head coach to be introduced to a fan base, very hungry for a winner over the last 5 years. What do you want them to know about you today that will help them be optimistic that it'll be different this time?
Passion and positive energy. It creating a culture. I just got chills, you know, saying, I mean, it's real. And so everybody in here just having that energy and that belief and that trust of what's going to happen on a daily basis. And that all started for me with this organization and the interview process. I can't tell you how good that went and just feeling it from Mr. McCaskey, Mr. Phillips, and from Ryan. That was powerful. And so I take that, I come here and I start meeting everybody, and you see where they're at, they're hungry, and the fans are hungry, and I get that. And that's why they selected me to come in here, is to help get that culture back to where it's just a prideful thing where we go out there each and every day and practice at the games. Now it's talk, but we got to make it happen. And unfortunately for me, I was a part of a program in an organization in Kansas City where we kind of came into that same type of deal in 2013, and I got to witness it under Coach Reed on how you do that. So I have my notes, I have my journal, and now I got to put it to use.
So going back to draft night, I think it's been pretty established that even across the entire league, a lot of people were surprised when Ryan traded up to get Mitch. You were in the market for a quarterback. You just talked about that. You talked about the time you spent with Mitch. How surprised were you when that happened on draft night?
Well, I wasn't surprised just because I know that every team is different. Everyone has their own needs, and everyone has their own flavors. There's vanilla and chocolate ice cream. Everybody likes different people, players for different reasons. And so that's who Ryan and this organization wanted to go after. They had a plan for it. They attacked it, and they did it. So, that's a credit to them for doing that. And they were aggressive with it. They believed it. They had conviction. And let's go.
On the left, JD.
Matt. Did one of the reasons you took this job, did you take this job because you think you can win right away?
So any competitive person, which I am, extremely competitive, you want that to happen. But we also just got done playing, a 16-game season along with the playoff game with the Chiefs. So a lot of focus was on that. For me, it's going to be intriguing for me to dive into the process of learning the roster better, and learning who the coaching staff is, and understanding who, the rest of the coaching staff. For us, I just think that we need to just stay true to it and just have a plan.
Matt, the quarterbacks you've been around under Andy and so forth, have been Donovan McNabb, mm-hmm. Michael Vick a little bit, Alex Smith. They've all had some success. What is the theme, or has there been a constant that Andy has taught you or you've taken away? What do they all have, and what does Mitch Trubisky have to have? Obviously, leadership.
Yeah.
But what is it about? There are different types of guys. What one common thread is there?
They all had a coach that believed in them. And so I'm not saying that that's the case here, but what I'm saying is those guys that you just named, and that's why there's a common theme with Coach Reed. He has a method to his madness of just showing those guys that he believes in them. And then what happens is they understand that he believes in them, and they work on their weaknesses, and they try to get better. They ask questions. They all have different ways of learning. But words don't do it justice. You have to come and sit in the QB room and listen to how Coach teaches to those guys. And the questions that he asks, he doesn't do all the talking. He lets them give feedback. And so over time, that grows, and it makes them become a better player. And then in turn, over the next 10 to 20 years, you get results like that.
What were those first couple years as Andy's assistant like in that role? And then also, what have you learned about him as far as the teaching element that you just...
Repeat that, please.
The first couple years when you were with Andy as his assistant, what were those years like for you? And then as a teacher, what did you learn from him? What traits did you learn from the teaching standpoint?
Yeah. So my first year as a coach's assistant, I was actually basically like a secretary quality control for the special teams coordinator, the offensive coordinator, and the defense coordinator. So that would have been, at the time, Sean McDermott was the defense coordinator, Marty Morningweg was the offensive coordinator, and Bobby April was the special teams coordinator. So I was there for them in any role they needed me. And then the following year, I ended up going to offensive quality control and just strictly working for Marty. As far as the way coach teaches, details. That's what it comes down to. And so you're always learning more about a play or a concept. We're still writing our books. I still, to this day, write every play down, every detail of each play. And usually once a week, there's a couple details, even being with him and knowing it inside out. There's still a detail that he'll always spring on. And the best part about it is he always asks me 2 hours later, did you get that detail? And he knows what it is. And so he's just he has a way to really reach people.
Matt, have you decided to retain Dave Ragone or any other assistants? Staff.
Again, not at that point yet. That's one of our first objectives here, really right away.
Next
Matt, do you view bringing in a coach with considerable experience as something that would help round out the staff? You know, you're 39, don't have as much as some other guys.
You saying I'm young?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's important. You want to have diversity. You want to have experience diversity as well. You know, you have to have. What you don't want is a staff full of the same people, right? You want to have people that teach in different ways, that get across. There might be some yellers, some screamers, and there might be some guys that are just real. You know, they teach in a nicer way. I'll keep it that way. So, it's more about understanding. You know, why are they here? So having a staff full of quality people and that have high character but yet are great coaches, you can find those. Let's fill the whole staff with that. And they're out there. And listen, again, going back to this staff right here, it's only fair to give them an opportunity as well to present who they are and keep going from there.
We heard you talk earlier about Alex Smith, but what about your work with Patrick Mahomes? Helped shape you in terms of working with a young quarterback, and how would you characterize your overall teaching experience with a player of that experience level?
Yeah, it made me adapt as a coach. So I had Alex from in 2013, 14, 15, 16, and now 17. And so what happens is we do different things with the playbook. We tweak different things with his footwork. I know how he works. He knows how I work. I might tell him he's doing something. You know, and he just kind of put, you know, because we have that relationship. Whereas with Patrick, it was different. He's coming in as a rookie. It's a different way to teach for me. But that was good. It kind of brought that out of me to understand. Listen, he doesn't know the concept of this play, the flanker drive Texas halfback wide. He doesn't understand that. Whereas Alex can do it in his sleep. So it made me a better person, and it made me a better coach. And then to see the dynamics of Alex handle himself with a first-round draft pick with Patrick, the way Patrick handled himself with Alex. That's something that I'll take with me for whatever situation I ever get in again, to be able to have that situation and the respect for one another and the trust in one another, how that was built over time, invaluable.
Matt, you mentioned what it meant to be the head coach of the founding franchise in the National Football League. How much do you know about the history of the Bears?
Well, I feel like I know a good amount. You know, this might bring out my youth a little bit, but I do remember one of the first Super Bowls is seeing the Super Bowl against the Patriots, you know, and I, you know, obviously, you know, the history of where this team is at. You asked me a question, maybe why don't you test me and see? I don't know. You have a question for me?
I don't think you want that.
Thank you. Well, thank you.
Matt, down the middle here. After 4.5 hours of interviewing with Ryan, what was your first impression when you walked out of that interview after it ended?
A good one. Really good. Again, I'm just gonna say this. When I went into this, I was looking for I go a lot by my gut feeling on how things are gonna go. I had no idea. It was my first interview ever, interviewing for a head coaching position. I had no idea how it was gonna go. All the interviews are different. As I went into the interview, in that room, you felt it. And it's a special feeling. And when we walked out and we just had a conversation amongst the two of us, you kind of knew that this could be really good. And so, again, I'm going to be right there by his hip. I got his back. I'm going to support him in every way possible. And it was mutual, and it was reciprocated. That was reciprocated to me. And when you have that, that's a beautiful thing.
So that was the most extensive interview you've ever had?
Well, it was, it probably was. You know, it was in a good way. I mean, it was a very an experience that I'll never forget.
I want to ask you about the game the other night.
Mm-hmm.
Can you confirm whether or not you were calling plays the entire time and just the thinking of the play calling in the second half?
Yeah, I called every single play in the second half. You know, again, that's a learning situation for me. You know, I've gone back, I've looked at it. There's scenarios where I wish I would have made some different choices with the play call. But, you know, for me, that was a failure in my book, for me. But I'll grow from it, and I'll learn from it, I promise you that. So I'll use that as a strength here for me with the Chicago Bears. And, you know, I felt terrible for our team, for our organization. We put in a lot of good work. And again, going back to the question of losing somebody, you lose a player like Kelsey, you got to adapt. You know, I know that our offense and our offensive staff supports me. Coach Reed supports me. But I called every play in that second half. I stand by it. And I promise you, I'm going to learn from it.
Matt, as you're going through the league and you're coaching, are you writing down a list of guys you would want on your staff, or, you know, if you ever get this head coaching job, and at the same time, kind of like defining your beliefs when you go into that interview?
Yeah, it's not easy to do. You try to do it just because it's a good exercise. Number one, you never know if you're going to get an opportunity, so you try to plan ahead. It's not something by any means that you can cram at the end of the season. That doesn't happen. There's conversations that go on, you know, at different times, but you just have to you have to put your focus during the season on your team. Otherwise, you're taken away. So that was one of the things I learned going into this thing was trying to build the staff and understand how that goes. And get some ideas of where that's at, because again, you just don't know what you have here on this staff, and that's only fair to those guys that are here right now.
Matt, how intrigued were you with the Colts, especially with Chris Ballard there, given your relationship?
Well, again, you know, it's as far as the team, you can just like here with Chicago going into the interview, you try to get as much as you can on the team and understand who they have and where they're at. Yeah, Chris and I have a good relationship away from football, being with the Chiefs together. I respect the heck out of Chris. I think he's going to do a great job there in Indianapolis. He respects me and understands my decision. So for me, he just wants the best for my family and for me in a business decision. But it was just a feel, and I just know that where we're at here, it felt good, and it's no slight to Indianapolis. They have a great team. Great things are going to happen, and this is just the way it went.
So when you wrapped up the interview in the morning with the Bears, did you go to a different room wherever you were at to talk to the Colts? Did you get in your car? Did a car pick you up? And then when did you find out you were going to have dinner with those guys?
So it was a different room, number one. That would have been weird. I went right into it. You know, I told my wife by the end of it, I was starving. I didn't eat all day. So it was, but we got together. I met with Chris and some others there and we had a good conversation. And then after that, I went back to the facility. We had our exit interviews with our players back at the facility, got to see some of those guys. And then, proceeded to get a call to ask to go to dinner, and I was all in.
A couple more years. Go to bed, what restaurant?
Stock Hill. You ever been there? It's pretty good.
So when you exclusively took over the play calling duties, I was at that game. It was a Jets game.
Yeah.
You had family, friends there, and you looked super relaxed, but could you describe the adrenaline shift that week for you?
Yeah.
And then sort of two parts, how aggressive would you describe yourself as a play caller?
Yeah, so two good questions. The first part of it was it was the first time since 2008 when I stopped playing football as a player that I had that feeling in my stomach that you get. It's an awesome feeling. And you get that little nervousness in your stomach. And then after the first play call, in football is the same way, after the first drop back or hit, that thing goes away, and it happened in that Jets game. But I love that feeling, and I was telling some people the other day that it's a special feeling to have that, and it just knows that you're prepared and you're ready and you're excited. And then as far as being aggressive, that's my nature. I'm going to be aggressive, but it's got to be calculated. So you need to understand the difference between being too aggressive and not aggressive enough. But if you ask somebody to cross the line on me being aggressive or not aggressive, they're going to definitely say he's an aggressive play caller and person.